Hello, neighbors. Let me tell you how much fun I have had making this podcast and producing it. My word, or like my focus of 2022, has been connection. And I've definitely been able to connect with old and new friends through this podcast. It's given me the excuse to call up old friends and interview them for the podcast, like today's guest, Andrea Call. We went to high school together. She is a fraternal twin and works as a child psychologist. So we chat about what it's like for her at being a twin, as well as her advice for parents to help their children and their mental health. And next week, I connect with a new friend for the very last episode of season two. I talk with Dr. D. She is a twin girl mom who loves to encourage twin moms to thrive. I hope that you are having an amazing summer and that the weather has been exactly what you hope for in a summer. And enjoy the second to last episode of season two. Hey, I'm Amber, mom to boy-girl twins plus three other girls. My oldest was in kindergarten when baby five came along. I have a lot of kids and a lot of practice parenting them, but when I have a question, I turn to an expert, another mom. I believe the best advice comes from moms in the trenches, living it day in and day out. So sit back as I ask the real experts, moms like you, all the advice you asked for, and some you didn't. This is Neighborhood Twin Mom. Welcome to the neighborhood. Andrea Call is my friend from high school. She and her twin sister, Amanda, we all went to high school together and had several classes together, actually. And everyone called them the Call Sisters. And I'm not sure why they didn't call you Call Twins, but it was always the Call Sisters. Now, Andrea is a child therapist and former school psychologist. So, well, why don't you tell us a little bit more about your credentials?
So I'm Andrea. I have a master's degree in psychology and then what we call an education specialist degree in school psychology. And so I worked in the schools for several years doing IQ testing, special education evaluations, working one-on-one with students, behavior intervention plans, all of that jazz. And then I went back to school and I got a master's in social work. So right now I am what is called a CSW, a clinical or a certified social worker. And I have just submitted my application on Friday to get what's called an LCSW, which is a licensed clinical social worker. And that will mean that I get to practice independently. I don't have to have a supervisor sign my notes or anything. I'm working right now in an agency where I work mostly with children. I have like one or two adults on my caseload, but primarily I work with kids on a lot of like social skills, mental health issues, anxiety, depression. We have a lot of trauma and then like foster care, adoption sort of.
Okay. So tell me your favorite part about being a twin.
I think it was that like I had a built-in best friend. Growing up, Amanda and I were like always in the same classes. It wasn't really until like junior high, middle school that we had different classes and like kind of separate friend groups. And so I always knew I always had Amanda and I didn't have to worry about like who's going to be there and who am I going to hang out with, because I just always had a friend with me.
Did you guys request to be in the same class in elementary school or is that your parents' choice?
I think that was my parents' choice. I think if we would have expressed like, hey, can we be in different classes? They probably would have been okay with it. But we started in the same classes. And then also when we were in elementary school, it was year round school. And so my mom had all of the siblings on the same track. So we were all like at school at the same time and we had the same breaks. And so that also necessitated that we were just in the same class all the time.
Got it. Because there's probably just one teacher for that track to not. Mm-hmm. Otherwise yeah. You have summer break at different times. Oh, that makes sense. That makes sense. Did you guys know that people called you the Call Sisters? Did they call that to your face or just behind your back?
That makes sense. Sometimes they would call like me and like my older sister, like we were the Call Girls. Mm. So the Call Sisters sounds much better.
than Call Girls. Oh my gosh. Took me a second. When you guys got called the wrong name, did you respond or did you have like a witty comeback or did you care if people called you the wrong name?
I don't remember. At this point, I don't care. Pretty much I'll answer to any name that starts with A, because like in my family, we're all A's. You just get used to answering. You answer whatever mom calls.
Yeah. You guys don't look alike at all. You're fraternal twins. Like, you have light hair. Your sister has dark hair. You guys are different heights. I mean, you look like sisters, but like, not really. Like, you're very, very easy to tell you apart. But I still never remembered which one was which. I never called you guys by your name. Did you know that? I'd be like, hey, what's up, girl? Hey, how's it going?
I never noticed it. You're safe.
I would have to like prep myself before I would see you guys. I'm like, okay, I'm going to class with Andrea now, not Amanda. What is your least favorite thing about being a twin?
I was thinking about this, and I remember several like birthdays where I would get really grumpy because I had to share a birthday. Mm. And so like, we always had family, like a family tradition, and you got to like pick where you want to go to dinner. And then mom would make like the kind of cake that you wanted. And if you have a twin, you don't get to choose both things. Mm. So one of us got to choose dinner and one of us got to choose what kind of cake we wanted. And then like the next day or a couple days later, like we would switch. And so you still got what you wanted, but you didn't get it all in one day. And I remember being grumpy, like I had to share a birthday.
Oh, that's an interesting tradition of doing two cakes, but not on the same day. Mm-hmm. Like separate days you would do cakes. Oh, that's interesting. Because I have heard that a lot from twins, that they hated sharing cake. It's like, I wanted my own cake. Do you take turns blowing the candles out, or you just like did it together?
We did it together. I do remember, like, I've seen pictures where we both have the pair of two cakes. Mm-hmm. So maybe when we were younger, my mom did that. But
it could be a lot of cake.
Two cakes around.
Yeah. I was like, it could be a lot of cake. I've also heard mom, parents doing like cupcakes. So then it seems, I don't know, like you still have your own, but it's less overall things to consume in the house, but it wouldn't solve like the flavor issue.
No, but you could like do like a base and then like add in like chocolate or.
That's true. I'm not that fancy. Like, I'm not that fancy. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess you could do that. What was, you guys would match in high school. Like you would wear matching outfits. Was that you or your sister? I know it wasn't your parents.
Do you remember a lot more than I do?
Oh, well, it was, did you know in our yearbook, there are three sets of twins on the same page?
I did not. I feel like, and even as adults, and maybe we'll get into this, like Amanda and I lived together as adults and we had like similar clothes. It wouldn't surprise me if like I wore a pink shirt and Amanda wore a blue shirt, but I don't remember like matching
it. Really? No, I remember you guys had this one outfit that you would often wear on the same day. And it seemed intentional because you'd also wear the same shoes. So so it was not an intentional thing. Like you got dressed in the morning and said, hey, let's wear this same shirt today.
Probably not.
No way. I totally thought it was intentional. It would happen lots of times. I'm like, that's kind of cute.
I'm going to have to text her after this.
Yeah, because I always just figured, I thought it was endearing. I was like, that is so cute that they still match, even though their mom obviously isn't matching them. I thought it was endearing. How did you feel though in high school? You guys were both top 1% of our high school. And we went to a big high school. Our graduating class was like over 600 people. And again, you probably, maybe you knew this, maybe you didn't, but people always talked about you guys because you were top 1%. And it was, they would compare you guys because your sister was she valedictorian? Salutatorian?
I don't remember. There's another girl that was like up there too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you weren't. And everybody knew it. No. You got to be in biology. I mean, everyone talked about it. Oh yeah, she's out because she got to be in biology. I don't even know if that's true because I was never going to tell you to your face, but that's what people said about you. I was like, oh my gosh, did you hear? She's out of the running for valedictorian. Were you aware of people talking about you guys and comparing you guys behind your back like that?
I don't know if I was consciously aware of it, but I feel like, yes, people were talking. But also I feel like it started because we moved to California right before eighth grade. Mm-hmm. And so in middle school, and then we had to go to Tracy High for our math class as eighth graders. And so I feel like that just set us on this course of like, people are talking about us.
There was just the two of you that went to the school? There wasn't other ones?
I think there were two others. Mm. Because by senior year, I remember there was a group of us that did like calculus BC.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there were a few that like advanced up too. But it was like right from the beginning, we were like, we were just weird.
You were set apart because you were so far ahead of everybody else. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it didn't bother you that she ended up being, you know, I'm going to say valedictorian because I like her.
I know. Well, she had to speak and I got to just sit there. Okay. So, I mean, I think I got the better end of the deal.
But it always seemed like you guys were friends and got along. And so the jealousy thing wasn't a factor.
Yeah. Like there might have been instances where it was, but my parents, I feel like, always told us, it doesn't matter what grade you get, we want you to do your best. And I remember, especially in biology, that Amanda was always really good at like the multiple choice questions. She just learned those things really well and could answer multiple choice questions really good. And I am more of the writer. And she was like, you can BS your way through anything. I said, yes, I can. I feel like it was just an opportunity for us to like show our strengths. She was very much like the knowledge memorizing book smart person. And I feel like I did better just talking and like verbalizing my way through it and kind of just exploring that way and not necessarily knowing the exact answer, but being able to talk around the answer and get my point.
Yep. You guys had different strengths and you were able to play to those different strengths. Although people mm-hmm. in high school thought you guys were the same person.
Yes.
Even though you don't look anything alike. Okay. So you want to talk a little bit about, you said you lived with Amanda as an adult. What is your relationship like now? You guys don't even live in the same state.
Yeah. So we went to BYU. We lived together. My first year, actually, we lived with my older sister. So like the three of us all lived together, which was super fun. And then Amanda and I lived together until I went on my mission. And then when I got home from my mission, she was in LA at grad school. So and then like we didn't live together, and it wasn't until.
And then you went on a church mission to South America, right? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So how was it being apart from her?
It was initially difficult. Because we did everything together. Like I think until, because I finished up the semester in December, and then like we had Christmas, and then I stayed home and left for the mission in February. But like that month was like the first time that like Amanda and I weren't hanging out all the time. We could talk on the phone and like all of that. But then, like, once I got to the MTC, like, well, I'm with somebody all the time, but it is not Amanda.
Yeah.
And so that was, like, more difficult. I remember, like, writing in my journal, like, it was just weird. But, like, we wrote, and, like, she wrote me every week. I would write her. We stayed close while I was on the mission. It was just a different kind of close. And almost, like, we had to be more intentional because we weren't just physically right next to each other all the time.
So you think that strengthened your relationship or just made it different?
Both. Like it strengthened it, but it did result in it being different. And like she had different experiences while I was on the mission too. Like she graduated from BYU, she went to grad school. That was like the first time like we went our separate ways.
What is it like now with you guys?
So now she lives up in Idaho. And I'm in Provo. So we text occasionally, like we were texting yesterday. And then we're both just kind of busy with work. And so that makes it hard. Usually on the weekends we can talk. And like I've gone up there and visited her for like long weekends and things. I feel like we do like still communicate, but I feel like it's more like just like a sibling relationship than necessarily like a specific twin relationship.
A lot of people talk about like twin connection, telepathy or whatever. People love to talk about that kind of a thing. But did you ever feel that sort of connection that people see in the movies and books?
Yes. So when we were at BYU together, one of our favorite things to do is we would challenge the guys that lived like across the hallway from us to a Mario Kart race on the Super Nintendo, because, you know, it was back in the day. And we would, I would use one hand and Amanda would use one hand, and we would share the same controller.
Oh my gosh.
It was lots of fun. And then we would challenge somebody else and be like, oh, you think you're really good at Mario Kart? Well, fine. You can use both hands, and me and Amanda will each use one hand. And that was like our little trick. We're like in tune with each other enough, like, we can do this and still beat you.
Oh my gosh, that's funny.
It was good times.
All right, so you went into psychology. Actually, we had the same major. Our undergrad major was the same. But
oh, yeah.
Well, kind of, sort of. Mine was a little bit. I did rec, like, leisure.
Okay.
And you did rec therapy. Okay. So I did rec fun. But yeah. Now you're into psychology. Now I get to get all your free advice, basically. A lot of moms listen to this podcast. What are the major issues that you see that are affecting kids right now in their mental health?
I think the biggest one that we see is anxiety. We have a lot of kids that just come in and are like anxious about all sorts of things. I feel like COVID in a way kind of helps that along. But I think even before COVID, it was an issue. The other thing I see a lot is just like a lack of social interactions.
Like they don't know, kids don't know how to interact with other people. Like little kids or teenagers, like, or both?
Both. Like everything we do is like through a screen, and like kids just want to play video games and they text their friends. And I mean, COVID exacerbated this, but we don't have the face-to-face interactions that we used to have. And I think there's a lot of social skills that you have to have if you're going to talk to somebody face-to-face. You can kind of fake it through a screen. But if you get kids in person, you can't really fake social skills.
Let's back up. So anxiety, I feel like that word gets tossed around a ton, way, way, way more than when we were kids, which,
yes,
it, you know, in some respects, I'm like, oh, this is so good that people are talking about this and bringing awareness to it. But other times I'm like, when is it just like, oh, I'm feeling anxious? Or when is it like you have anxiety, I guess is my mean, like, where is the line?
Yeah. And I think the simple answer is when it's negatively impacting your life, causing clinical distress. So we have, they call it the DSM. It's the Diagnostical and Statistical Manual. And it's like the Bible of mental health diagnoses. With generalized anxiety disorder, the criteria include feelings of anxiousness or feeling worried more days than not, and then finding it difficult to control those worries. Those are like the top two criteria. And so when I have a kid that comes in and I'm doing an assessment, I look for those two things. And then depending on the age of the kid, there have to be other symptoms too. And then the final criteria is that it has to like negatively impact one area, one or more areas of functioning. So that could be like, you know, like socially or academically. For adults, it's like if it interferes with their ability to hold a job, then we say it's like clinically significant. And so everybody feels anxious. We all have those moments where we're just nervous or we're worried about something, but it becomes something that I'd say like reach out and like seek help for when it's like more days than not, it's interfering with your ability to just like enjoy life.
What about social anxiety? It's like, you're fine unless you have to do something basically that you don't want to do, you know, go hang out with people. So when should you push your kid? This actually happened to me at school today. I was talking to another mom at school pickup, and she said, my daughter, you know, she gets anxious when she has this thing at school and she's feeling anxious. Like, when do I need to seek help for it? Or do I just let it go? Where is the balance between like, you're being a normal teenager and you don't want to do something and you're anxious because you're a teenager, or like, this is a problem, you know? Do you push your kid and make them do something?
I always laugh when parents ask me, like, what should I do? Because I'm not a parent. I mean, I have my, like, fur children and my dogs, but I just make them do what I want. With kids, one of the things I look at, and this is something I did as a school psychologist, is we would look at a can't do versus a won't do.
Okay.
And so is it that this child, like, does not have the skills to do this or does not have the skills to manage it? Or is it that the kid is refusing? Obviously, hardly anybody likes doing things that are hard. If it's hard, we're all going to be like, no, thank you. And so recognizing, like, for kids, a lot of things are difficult, but can they do it? Or could they do it with support? I always like to tell kids, like, we're going to try it. And if it's too much, then we're going to take a break. We're going to use our coping skills and we'll try again later. But if we don't try and we just are like, we'll do it later, it makes it that much harder the next time because that avoidance, like, reinforces the anxiety. We're like, oh, I don't have to do this. The anxiety feeling goes away and then we associate it with, oh, I'm not anxious because I don't have to do it, instead of I'm not anxious because I worked through it.
Okay, so tell me your coping skills for that. Or what can you teach your kids?
Mm-hmm. So one of my favorites that I teach very first is just deep breathing. And just that idea of taking slow, deep breaths, giving our brain a chance to get the oxygen so that it can think clearly. Depending on the kiddo that I'm working with, if it's a little boy, a lot of times I do like racetrack breathing or like figure eight breathing. And we just like have a little car that we trace in a figure eight. With like little girls, a lot of times I'll do rainbow breathing where like we trace the red from one end of the rainbow to the other. And we breathe in, and then on the orange, we breathe out. And we kind of do that back and forth just so that they can practice taking those deep breaths. The second skill that I teach all of my kiddos is the five senses meditation. And so the idea there is like we're taking deep breaths and then we look at our five senses. So first we're going to find five things right now that I can see. And I'm going to name those things. And then I'm going to look and I'm going to find four things that I can touch with my hands. And what does that feel like? Is it smooth? Is it rough, hot, or cold? And then I do three things that you can hear, two things that you can smell, and then one thing you can taste. And then we talk about if we are doing that meditation and we're being very mindful, we're in the present moment and we're focusing on what can I see, what can I smell, what can I hear, instead of focusing on what I'm worried about or what I'm angry about. And then that gives our body a chance to calm down. When our body's calm, our brain calms down, and we can go back and address the problem better. We're like more calm, our brain is working, we can think through it instead of just reacting. So those are the two that like I teach very first.
Once you get your kid calmed down though, and they still don't want to do something, mm-hmm. you said don't avoid it. So you could guess you just, then what?
Why don't they want to do it? And that's what I try to explore. Sometimes it's they don't know how. In that case, we teach them. Sometimes it's not fun. And so we talk about how sometimes life is not fun. And we have to do things that aren't fun. And we talk about, well, I don't really want to go to school today, but I am excited to come home and make cookies with mom. And so we talk about how we do something hard, but usually we can do something we like afterwards. Or we talk about, this is going to be really hard, but I'm going to be so proud of myself when I run this lap. You know, whatever it might be. Sometimes it's, they're just like, I don't want to do it by myself, or I'm afraid I'm going to be the only one there. And just kind of like brainstorming, who could go with you? Or how could we make this a little bit easier? Sometimes there's things that, like, as parents or siblings that we can do to, like, well, I'll walk you to your class, or I'll come check on you at recess, things like that. A lot of times, like, I have kids that, like, are afraid and, like, have separation anxiety, like, mm-hmm. kindergarten first graders. Well, let's get something of mom's, like a necklace or something that you can, like, either wear or you can keep in your backpack, so that when you miss mom, you have this, or a picture of mom. And so then it's like you have a familiar object that kind of gives you strength.
I like that. I never thought about doing that. I've heard of the Kisses book where you kiss their hands. Have you read that book?
Mm-hmm.
And my kid was like, yeah, but what happens after I wash my hands, mom? All right. Well, until you wash your hands, this will work. You can put my kiss in your hand. I was telling you before we started recording that kindergarten has been tough for one of my kids. Mostly I attribute it to the fact of the pandemic and really not seeing a lot of people. A lot of these twin moms that I have recently interviewed, like, their kids were born during the pandemic, like, you know, early 2020. And now they're, you know, this thing is still dragging on. So these are now pandemic toddlers, you know. So what advice do you have to make these little babies, these children, mentally strong?
Mm-hmm. I'm going to kind of just reinforce, like, one of the things we talked about is, like, explicitly teaching our kids what to do. I was talking to my mom on Mother's Day about, she's in primary with, like, the 3 and 4 year olds. And so these kiddos didn't go to nursery.
Right.
So they don't know how to behave at church.
Yeah.
And the kindergartners who didn't go to preschool don't know how to behave in a school setting. And so my recommendation is we have to explicitly teach them. And so we have to tell them, like, this is what happens when we go to school. And this is how we line up. And this is how we sit still. And this is how, you know, we interact at recess. I think about, like, the teachers who, when they're teaching a kid to read, they go over it, like, 100 times. And emotional things, behavioral things are the same way. We can't just teach our kids, like, the first day of school, this is how it works, and expect them to understand it. We have to be teaching them every day and rewarding them when they're doing it right. So if you see a kid that's, like, sitting quietly in their chair, we're rewarding that because we're wanting to reinforce and encourage that behavior in others. With, like, the pandemic and, like, kind of things are, like, starting to open back up, kids are in school again, I think part of it is, as parents, modeling behavior. So some parents get nervous about sending their kiddos to school, and the kids can pick up on that.
Mm-hmm.
And so as parents, like, I know it's hard to manage our own emotions, but I would just try to, like, realistically talk about that. And it's okay to be nervous and to be scared to do things, but we're going to try it. I really like the idea of resiliency. One of my grad school professors talked a lot about cactus plants. We were, like, the cactus cohort. And this idea of, like, cactus plants are in the desert in this very dry environment. They're kind of prickly. But they're actually, like, very resilient creatures, and, like, they store water, so they have it for an emergency. They survive in, like, really harsh conditions, and just kind of taking that imagery into, like, moving out of the pandemic. Like, we've been in this desert, and it's been difficult. It's been difficult for parents. It's been difficult for kids, and just kind of, like, moving forward and, like, blossoming in that, like, moving forward place. And so it's not always going to be easy, but I think we teach our kids, like, we do hard things. We can try hard things. And that doesn't mean we're good at it the first time. That doesn't mean we like it or that, you know, we want to keep doing it. But I think a lot of times we don't give ourselves credit for how strong we actually are and how capable we can be.
So what is, maybe you've already said it, that's okay, but do you have, leave us with your single best thing you can do for, you know, any sort of mental health for children? Doesn't have to be anxiety. Just like, what's the best thing? Like one thing that I can be doing. Maybe I haven't been doing it this whole time I've been a parent, but what can I start today to like help my little babies?
I think the biggest thing is to normalize talking about emotions and normalize feeling all emotions. Sometimes like we only want to talk about the comfortable emotions. And I've really tried to get away from like good versus bad emotions or even positive and negative emotions. And I like using the words comfortable and uncomfortable because we all have feelings that we like to feel. You know, most of us like feeling happy and most of us don't like feeling sad or angry or afraid. But just normalizing and talking about all emotions are okay emotions. However you feel is totally fine. That said, you don't get to act however you want to act. Like you are still responsible for your behavior, but the emotion and what you're feeling is okay. And just really talking about that and validating your child's experience. Not saying like, oh, you're really sad, but we get to do this. Or, well, you shouldn't be angry at your sister because she didn't mean to. Like just really getting down on your child's level and being like, that really sucks. Or that's hurtful. And that makes sense. And just normalizing talking about emotions.
Wow, that's awesome. I'm going to have a good conversation with my husband after this. Things that we can put in place in our family. Okay, Andrea, tell me where people can find you.
I just started a new Instagram account. It's called AndreaCall_counseling. With me getting my L and being fully like independently licensed is what they call it. I'm setting up my own business where I will be creating mental health courses that are designed specifically for kids. One of the things that I've noticed at my agency is we have a huge wait list, and this is very common across many agencies. And so I hope that like I can put together resources that like you as a parent member could take, and it will help you facilitate these discussions with your kid. Because a lot of what I do as a therapist, the first few weeks are explicitly teaching these emotions, this like mental resiliency, how do I express how I'm feeling? And that we can put in a course format. The processing and going through like the difficult life experiences that we can't put in the course, but just making the information available, I think is really important. And so I will have some courses up in the next few weeks, probably by the time the podcast launches, I'll have some ready. And then I'll just be sharing like some tips, some of my favorite children's books.
Oh, I would love that. I'm very big into books as teachers.
I read at least 2 books every day with my kids because they teach just such good lessons. And I feel like kids would rather listen to a book than listen to me talk. And so like sharing some of my favorite children's books and how I use that in therapy, different art activities that I do, the rainbow breathing that we talked about, and just like things like that. I feel like the more accessible mental health can be, the better it's going to be for the kiddos.
Let me say from quality sources.
Yes. Yes. From people who like have been in the trenches, and like I've worked with a lot of kids. And so I've been able to see like, oh, kids understand it when I present it this way. And they understand it when it's like this. And it's not just me. So I'm going to make something up today. I'm drawing on like the 10 years of experience I have in the mental health.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much for this interview. I have learned a lot. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. It was fun to chat.
Thanks for hanging out with me today. If you want to hang out some more, you can follow me on Instagram at @neighborhoodtwinmom. If you want more info on what we talked about in this episode or a transcription of the audio, head to neighborhoodtwinmom.com. If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star rating and review. This helps other people be able to find the podcast. Music for this episode was composed by Cameron Norby. Find more of his work on YouTube.